I'm Stephen Moore, and I run a company called Transform to Succeed, and I'll explain what that is a little bit later on about a personal coach. Okay. I'm going to take you on a little journey.
Is this on?
Does it need to be on? Can you hear me?
No, I think we switched it off just to make your life difficult. Testing.
Just I might start singing, and that could be disastrous.
Karaoke request later.
So I'm going to take on a hopefully very quick journey in terms of how I got here. The reason for that is I think it may link to where you are now, and hopefully it resonates, which is a brilliant word, Wilson, to what some of the other speakers have said as well. I'll also try and explain what it is I now do and use a couple of clients as examples around that. And if we've got time, give you a couple of exercises that you can do to look at how you communicate and how you relate to people and maybe how you can make decisions. So my story, my life has been a series of paths and journeys, and I do like the concept of being on a journey that takes you to different places at different times. Some journeys have been really enjoyable, others perhaps not so, others have been really fulfilling, and others have been quite frustrating. I didn't like school, and the reason why I didn't like school was there were too many rules, too much time spent in the classroom, and too much reading, which is quite amusing as I went on to become a senior manager in a large bureaucracy and spent most of my time in committees and reading and writing reports. So sometimes the things that you don't like in the past may change in future life. I then went to college and trained as a podiatrist, which is not essential to know what a podiatrist is, but if anyone does know what a podiatrist is?
Speech.
Unfortunately not, no. It's really good marketing for the Society of Podiatrists. It's feet and walking difficulties. So my area of specialty was walking difficulties, and I specialised in children. And the reason why I specialised in children is because they're good fun, and old people aren't. Personal opinion. But also children come with complex problems that actually respond very well to treatment. So you can see some really great changes very quickly. And the other complication with children is you have more than one patient. The child arrives, but they invariably bring parents and sometimes grandparents with them. And that can sometimes cause problems. But the relevance to you as potential business owners and entrepreneurs, to treat children, they have to trust you. And they will do anything you ask them to do if they trust you, or they will do absolutely nothing if they don't. Okay? And to get that trust, you have to have rapport. And that rapport has to be built up with the child, not parents. Okay. I then moved quickly into management, and then even quicker into senior management, largely around the frustration of not being able to do things. That there was rules and there was budgets and there was procedures that had to be followed. So my idea of going to senior management was a way of bending some of those rules and getting around some of my frustration. And I managed a very wide range of services, which I really enjoyed. So it's mostly around GP services, family doctor services, community services, and hospitals, largely around small hospitals. And the last 15 years I spent working in the Outer Hebrides in the far north of Scotland, which is a community scattered across 10 inhabited islands, and I manage the community and hospital services in the Western Isles, which is a real joy and a real challenge. And I would say I've always made my PAs mad, because I'm not the kind of manager who stays in the office. I always wander around, so they always have to try and find me, and I spend my day talking to people and listening to people.
Next slide, please.
In 2007, I had the opportunity to go travel, and I spent 16 months travelling around the globe, and this gave me the opportunity to reflect, hence the picture, on what it was that I really wanted to do and what was important to me. And what I realised, what was important to me wasn't about managing services and having budgets and being very important and having a large office, which I invariably got given and then gave away, which frustrated some of my chief execs. But it was about the people I worked with and the challenges that they had in delivering the services and treating the patients that they wanted to treat. And that was where I found I got most excited in doing it. And I realised that my success had always come through other people succeeding in doing things. And that's when I kind of made the decision in terms of wanting to become a coach and wanting to be an enabler, helping people to deliver their dreams, do that. And a couple of things I managed to do whilst I was travelling, which linked with that, was to achieve some of my own dreams. And one of those was I went to the Tongat Mountains in the north of Labrador, where I saw my first wild polar bear, which was pretty exciting and pretty big. And I also kayaked around my own iceberg, which is something that I had dreamt about. Next slide. This is something I'd dreamt about for years and years and years, and I'd mentioned it to a friend who is an experienced kayaker who took me to the Tongat Mountains just really as a passenger. I was travelling with two professional photographers who were paying for the trip and I was just carrying the bags. Fortunately, we were transporting some kayaks for somebody else, and on our journey back, which was on a fishing boat, the captain found me an iceberg and they lowered me, literally, over the side of the boat, and I got to paddle around my own kayak, my own iceberg, all on my own, which was pretty amazing to do that. And fortunately, one of the professional photographers was kind enough to take some photographs for me. I also visited Antarctica, where I kayaked with humpback whales and with some leopard seals, which was also pretty exciting to do that. And I travelled to the high Arctic and also to Alaska. You'll kind of get the feeling that I like remote places. I'm not really into big cities, but they do have their moments. So when I came back and decided that I wanted to be a professional coach, and I spent 2 years training as a professional coach while still doing my job, which I really enjoyed. And then I took the decision that I needed to change location, change life, and really start being this coach. So I came to Lancaster, and at the age of 50, I started my master's degree, delighted that I wasn't the oldest person on campus. Relatively old, but not the oldest, which was quite important to the ego. And I did a master's degree in HR and consultancy, with the emphasis for me on the consultancy side of the business. I completed that in 2013, and since then I've been running my business. So what does a coach do? It's a good question, and I did my dissertation on it, so I could bore you for hours. And as part of my dissertation, I came up with an earth-shattering definition, which I won't bore you with, because there's a far better one. And that is coaching. Coaching is so powerful that if it was a drug, it would be illegal. A client walks into a coaching session stressed, overburdened, ready to give up, and 1 hour later emerges transformed, clear, focused, calmer, fit to fight and to win. That was from Anne Scholar at the Financial Times. Unfortunately, I didn't come up with as snazzy as that. Mine was incredibly academic, which the academics obviously liked. So my job is really to enable people to be really clear about what it is they actually do want to do and how they actually want to do it and what success, if you like that term, means to them to do that, and how they can engage with other people to help them realise their dream. And that engagement with others has come out through the other presentations of how you do that, because often you can't do it solely on your own. And the key thing here is about understanding yourself, but also understanding how other people make sense of the world and how you can interact with them. I coach lots of different people, ranging from 17-year-olds applying to university through to chief execs, medical directors, directors of HR. But more recently, through the university and through my dissertation, I've been coaching some entrepreneurs as well, and I really get excited about that. Entrepreneurs don't normally take up coaching, and there's a whole PhD around that. But coaching can take different forms with different people. So that could be just sat in an armchair somewhere quiet and exploring issues. It could be walking around the grounds here at the university, it could be hiking up a hill, or it could be going out in a kayak. It really depends on the client and what will work best for them, because it's all about the client in my business. Okay. And what I try to do in terms of listening to what they're looking to do and how they're looking to achieve it is using a variety of techniques to help them understand more clearly and perhaps on occasions change their own behaviours to adopt some new habits or to enable them to communicate more clearly with the people around them. And to give you a quick feel about the people I work with, I'll just mention two clients. One is an entrepreneur I met through the university who came to me for coaching because he had a business idea and he wanted coaching around how he could deliver it to do that. And the interesting thing there was he came with a very clear business idea. He'd done some market research. We sat down and we started to explore it, how he could move forward with it. And within 1 hour, he had radically changed his business plan and his business idea and his product. The impressive thing from my point of view was during the next two coaching sessions, because he only had three coaching sessions as part of an agreement, he not only changed his idea, but he set up the company and he delivered a prototype product. And 12 months on, he now has a range of products that are actually being sold through local businesses. So it showed how, again, he could, by exploring what he really wanted to do, he could actually come up with something that could work for him, and is now a success. And he's just advised that he's now making a profit, which is always quite nice to do. And the other person I'm working with that has a personal challenge is a musician and a cyclist and entertainer. And his personal challenge is around cycling across Canada and entertaining people as he goes, but also raising money for charity. Now to do that, he needs a lot of other people on board. There's a lot of logistics. There's the cycle, there's the equipment, and his overall fitness. But one of the problems of bringing other people into your dream is that sometimes they have a different view of your dream and they have different ways of achieving it, which may or may not fit with you. So sometimes you have to work with other people to educate them in terms of what your dream is and what it means to you, but also to get them on board in a way that is meaningful for them. And sometimes that may be that you don't work with people because the synergy is not there for you. And he's had to turn down some sponsorship because it would compromise what it is he really wants to do and why he's trying to do it. Okay. And if we've still got time, what I thought we'd do is, I'm looking at you, you're not looking too stern.
You look like a bingo caller, actually. With your table and your sheet. And your
I'd prefer rock star.
Yeah, I was thinking, I thought you were going to say, I'm going to do a quick quiz or something.
I won't be put off.
No.
Well, it could be a quiz. We could turn it into a quiz. We just put up one more slide. Yeah. That is the final one. Okay. I like reflections. And I should say, I should quote myself. These are my photographs as well, except the one that was taken by a professional because I was in the kayak at the time. Okay. So a couple of quick things that you can do for yourselves that I've worked with clients on. And help them to do it, and I use myself. People see the world differently. The best example of that is there's an incident, the police are called, there's five people, they take statements from all five people. How is it that they all see different things? And they all recall different things, yet it was exactly the same event that took place. And that is because we all see the world differently. We all filter that information in different ways to do it. Now, it's a very simplistic approach, but essentially there's four types of people. There's visual people, and they see pictures, and they run movies in their head. So when they recall something or think about something, they see pictures, and they run movies. And you can tell them by their language, because often they all use things like, I see that, or I don't see that. Or I get the picture, or that's clear to me. The other types of people are called kinesthetic, and they're people who feel things. So they generally go on gut reaction, and whether it feels right to them or it doesn't feel right to them, or they get the right vibe. The other types of people are auditory people. And this is all down to sound and whether the sounds make the right kind of tunes for them. And again, in their language, they'll use things like, that sounds right, that doesn't sound right, you're in tune with me, and things like that. And the fourth person is a digital person. And they like logic and processes and pathways. So they're looking for patterns in what you say or what you do. And if they can see that pattern is there for them, then they'll understand or feel understood. So again, they will come back with things like, that's logical. I see how that flows. That works for me. Okay. So when you're trying to communicate with other people, you need to try and get a feel for what it is, how they see the world, and try and communicate using their language and the way in which they do that. That way they will feel understood. In some essence, it doesn't really matter whether you understand them or not, but they will feel that you understand, and they will establish a little bit more rapport with you. And that helps you start to have that conversation if you want to influence them in terms of a sale or working with you. So establishing rapport is really key in terms of developing your business to do that. And the other one is around making decisions. We all have to make decisions. Some people make them very quickly, some people make them very slowly, but sometimes they're really hard decisions. So a quick thing that you can do with yourself or with your partner, or try it out with a friend first, is if you have to make a decision, be really strict with yourself. You've got two choices. One piece of information that will genuinely help you say yes or no, or one conversation with one person that will enable you to say yes and no. And you have no other options, and you'll be amazed at what you come up with and what happens when you follow that through. So one piece of information, no trolling the internet, one piece of information, or one person you need to have a conversation with, and you'll be amazed at what happens to your thought processes and what you then do. So my kind of take-home message, really, is it's never too soon, and it's never too late to follow your dreams. Okay, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Brilliant, thanks.
Unless I get kicked off. Coaching is so powerful that if it was a drug, it would be illegal. A client walks into a coaching session stressed, overburdened, ready to give up, and 1 hour emerges transformed, clear, focused, calmer, fit again to fight and win. And that's by Anne Scholar from the Financial Times.
Magnus George, I work here at the university. Who is your coach? And subsidiary question, can a person coach themselves?
A person can coach themselves. I'm trying to do myself a business, but you should be able to coach yourself in many circumstances, and that comes from understanding yourself and a better self-awareness to do that. What isn't a good model is to be reliant on a coach. So my skills should be helping you make decisions. You shouldn't be dependent upon me. So you shouldn't be in a situation where you need to ring your coach very often anyway. So yes, you can learn to self-coach to do that. I do have coaches who coach me, and I work with a supervisor. Also very pleasing from my point of view, I've had a number of professional coaches ask me if I will coach them as well. But it is important to have that system in place. Yeah.
Great. So I just wanted to say, I thought that was really inspirational, so thanks very much. But kind of on that point, how did you sort of work out what your mission was? If it is to help other people get the best out of themselves, at what point did you realise that, and how much soul searching did you have to go through to get that?
I think in a way I always knew that, but but I didn't think you could make that a career, because I was brought on the thing, you have to have a job and a career plan, and my career plan was to become a chief exec, and I suddenly realised, actually, I don't really want to do that. I was fortunate to have some time out that I went travelling, and I think that was the turning point for me, that I had the opportunity to just reflect and talk to other people and say, actually, I can do the committees, I can do the budget, I can do the statistics, but I don't get really excited about it.
Yeah.
And that was when I felt, actually, my management style has always been coaching. It's never been dictatorial, which sometimes I've been criticised. But actually, when you support people, they perform far better than if you threaten them.
So to summarise, it's kind of that understanding for you that people are at the centre of what you do through the ability to take a break from everything you're doing and just kind of reflect on what you've been working towards.
Yeah, that helps. It doesn't have to be 16 months traveling around the world. It could be just a few hours. It could be the time you're at university, which would be a really good time because you've got lots of people you can talk to and get some sound bites and other experiences you can get to do that. The other thing I didn't actually mention, which links to that, is when I came back, I actually employed a professional coach. And part of that was to test out whether or not I could actually become a professional coach, or whether, again, it was a fantasy because I was frustrated in some other ways. And through that, I decided that, yes, I do want to become a coach.
Great. I know, Shrew, if you had a question, was there another one? I just have to see somebody doing that. Andrew, are you still waiting at the back?
Yeah. I have one last question. Dressel's got a question. That was the last one.
Okay. Thank you so much for this. I have two questions. The first one, what are the key lessons you learned from your coaching career? The second one, if I want to be a coach, what are the key steps should I take to be a proficient coach?
Yeah. Thank you. I think the first thing is that you have to be true to yourself. And often when we get into difficulties in life, be they work-related, home-related, we're not actually being true to ourselves. We're playing some kind of role that we think maybe is important to play, but actually we're not being true to ourselves. And that can be really hard to look at yourself in that way, and that's where a coach can really help you. Most of the people I coach, there's a lot of emotion involved in that, because you actually get down to people's core beliefs and values very often. So that's the first thing. I think the other thing in terms of training is that, unfortunately, there are a variety of training systems out there, and it's not a regulated profession. But there are a number of universities that run very good accredited programs, and there are three now main professional bodies in the UK and Europe who run very good programs, and I would encourage you to do one of the accredited programs.
Can you name them?
Yeah, the International Coaching Federation. They have a whole range of providers who provide their coaching. There's also the European Mentoring and Coaching Council. They run a whole series of programs relating to coaching and mentoring, and also there's the Association of Coaching. So they all accredit training programs, which are all now pretty much at the same level to do that. There are a number of universities, but obviously I wouldn't mention those, because Lancaster isn't one, but they used to be. They don't run their coaching programs anymore, as far as I know, but Oxford do. Issues is really good because it links to what people have said before. There's the loneliness factor. It's also it's your personal dream, whether it's a product or a service or whatever, it's come from you. And it can be really difficult to get other people on board to see it how you see it and see the potential in it to do that. Or where you get people on board, they decide that they want to do it in a different way, or they want to take your dream in a different direction, which sometimes can be a really good thing, and you have to learn to go with the flow in that sense, but sometimes it's not a good thing because it's not what you want to do with your product or service. And I think the other area where entrepreneurs fail, which has been mentioned before, is the upscaling. So you have got a product or a service that really works, that people really like, and people are starting to buy, and all of a sudden, having produce 10, 15, 20, 100 just isn't good enough. People want 1,000, they want 2,000. And that's when it gets really difficult because you have to involve other people. And as Nikki mentioned, sometimes you have to give up the baby for somebody else to run. And either you move on to something else or you take a different role. And a lot of entrepreneurs fail at that point. So they fail at getting their idea supported because they fail to communicate and engage people, even though they're very clear about what they want. And then they fail by not upscaling in a way that works for them and works for their product or service.
Thank you very much.
There should be one other question.
Oh, go
should, yeah.
What's yours?
What's the best thing that happened as a result of coming to Lancaster?
I thought about this. I thought about this long and hard, and it was meeting you. And the other slightly more serious, but that was serious as well. Slightly more serious point is one of the things that I didn't really appreciate until I came to Lancaster was the international nature of the university. And now I have contacts and people all over the globe due to come into Lancaster. And most of my classmates were from China and from Asia and from Africa. There was only one other person from the UK, which, with all due respect to Jenny, was brilliant because it really opened your eyes to the international nature of the world. And I do and have coached people in different countries via Skype and by telephone.